I'd like to propose a toast.
Hello and welcome to Before Brunch. I'm Megan Cassidy.
And I'm Cassie Delaney.
And we are your weekly celebrity, pop culture, social issues and arts podcast. And we go live every Sunday morning just before brunch at about 11 a.m.
Anna Delvey.
Anna Delvey. So the reason we're talking about Anna today, this story really broke in 2018. The story culminated in 2017. That was when it all really happened. And she has now been released and she has proven to be extremely defiant, absolutely remorseless, and she's now profiting from her crime. So it's relevant again. Taking it back, in case you're not familiar with the Anna Delvey case, the original breaking of the story was in an essay in The Cut written by Jessica Pressler. And Jessica Pressler writes an explosive investigative piece a couple of times a year. They're always really well researched. And the theme with Jessica's essays are usually that it's not about the individual or the character in the story, but the system that it represents. And we'll talk a bit about that today. Jessica wrote this in 2018. About a woman called Anna Delvey, who was born Anna Sorokin in Moscow, and to a middle-class family. Her father was a truck driver. Her mother was a homemaker. And they started moving. They moved to Germany when she was a teenager, I believe. They moved to Paris. They moved to London. By the time she was 22, she landed in New York. And the story begins when she walks into a hotel and books a room for an extended period of time, €400 a night, and kind of cons the concierge and various other people into believing that she's an heiress. So now she's got the title fake heiress, changed her name to Anna Delvey, and then subsequently managed to con a whole range of banks, financial institutions, hoteliers into believing that she was this heiress and lived a lifestyle that absolutely reflected that fact, and racked up €270,000, defrauded people out of 270K. When you read the story, you would imagine it's a lot more. But on top of that, she was also convincing people to charter jets for 35 grand. She, one of her friends was forced to pay 60 grand for a trip to Morocco that she had believed was all expenses paid. So she was a master con artist.
Yeah.
And I think the obsession with the story lies in the fact that it's rare to see women commit financial crimes at such scale. And also, it's so Netflix. It's so the reinvention story, the con artist story, the grand ascent. Like,
yeah,
you just go from rags to riches. So really why it's so important now is she's come out of prison. So she was convicted in 2018. To 4 to 8 years. She was sent to Rikers, which is a famous New York jail, very violent, known for abuse and neglect of its prisoners. And she has now emerged into a world where crime is rewarded. She has shown no remorse. She's on Instagram drinking champagne in baths. She has secured a 320 grand deal from Netflix. Granted, a lot of that has to go back to some of the people she defrauded and attorney's fees and stuff. But she's signed this deal as a prisoner. She signed this deal, and it's almost like the secret is real. She faked it until she made it. Now she's got this huge Netflix deal.
Yeah.
The question is, should you be able to profit from crime? But that's we're in a culture now that celebrates crime. And I'm not going to continue. I'm aware that I've been rambling, but think about the Kardashians. They started with OJ's trial. This is the culture we're in now. Where's the deterrent from someone else trying to follow in her footsteps?
Especially one like this, which seems to be, when it's a financial crime and when it's led by women, it seems to be a victimless crime, because it's a bit of a Robin Hood story. She's not giving the money to the poor, but she's stealing from the rich to fit in, to operate. And what it really does is it highlights and sheds light on how ridiculous the system is.
Yeah.
And it's just like how easy it is for her to go and get someone to charter a jet for her. It's like, more fool them. You know, it's like, you've got more money than sense. There's loads of different little things that she did that seemed to be, you know, it seems to be that the victim here would be the insurance company who've been defrauded out of money. It's no one is going to be worse off, yeah, really, for Anna Delvey's crimes. Mm. They feel embarrassed, but she didn't kill anybody, you know?
Yeah.
So it's easy to excuse them. And I think that's why we are so fascinated with them. Also, you can point finger at the motive being that she moved around a lot when she was a child. They came from very sort of humble beginnings, and she seeks that kind of lavish lifestyle. The American dream, everybody seeks a better lifestyle. Everyone is aspirational. Mm. And we want to understand her motivations. And the way that we've learned to do that and to understand crime is through podcasts and is through Netflix specials.
Yeah.
So like we've just come to accept it as the norm now.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting. And the thing is, Netflix are going to make so much money off this.
Yeah.
Of this documentary series. And whatever fee they've paid her, she probably could have doubled it, because it's probably for the life rights of her story.
Yes. So it's actually really interesting. It's the exclusive rights. But what the deal entails is that for $320,000, she cannot consult or help the competition. So the story is up for grabs. In fact, I think HBO are going to do a version. Lena Dunham was talking about doing a version of the story from the conned friend's perspective.
Yeah.
Anyone can do the story from a different perspective. But what they have signed is that Anna can only consult on Netflix, can't do talk shows about the story, has something like a 3-year period where she can't release a book about it.
Yeah.
So they've sort of just cut off the competition at its source, yeah, through this deal. And it brings up a good point. I'm surprised she didn't get a lot more for that. I'm surprised she didn't dig her heels in, knowing what I know about Anna. And actually, she probably will listen to this podcast because she's a absolute narcissist. There's no
love you,
doubt.
Anna.
She, like, hi, Anna, because she will search her name. Since she's come out, she's incredibly touchy and responds to articles in the Daily Mail about herself, responds to commenters that might not keep up with the narrative that she's trying to control.
Yeah.
She's very, we always talk about narratives. She has said herself she wants to control the narrative. She's really touchy if you try to change her narrative. It's a typical narcissistic characteristic trait, but I have no doubt she will search her name in podcasts and maybe.
Oh, totally. Listen. And you can see from her. So, you know, one of the points we're making here is that she's back on Instagram, and the content that she's putting out on Instagram is strange. But she has a screenshot here of having bought her domains. You know, so she's bought Anna Delvey Diaries, AnnaDelvey.co, AnnaDelvey. You know, she's bought all of the iterations of her name in domain form so that no one can create content about her and that she can really, really, really totally control the story, which again is interesting because, so when you're making a documentary, even when you're doing a fictionalized work that's inspired by true events, as the creator, you have to license the life rights for that person. So if you want to use that whole based on a true story thing, you have to say, you have to go after the person, interview them, find out all the information and get an exclusive deal for the life rights. So it's interesting in a couple of ways. Firstly, the fact that Netflix, HBO, Prime and Sky are generally all covering the same topic. Like, how many versions of the Ted Bundy documentary did we have?
Yeah.
There's rumors of 3 more Britney docs coming out. You know, they're all looking at the same topics because I suppose we're all fascinated by the same thing, but we're seeing it from different perspectives. So whoever gets the life rights is generally going to have the biggest success because that's going to be the closest to the story. Or else it's going to reveal the information that we truly want to know. And in this case with Anna Delvey, for me anyway, I think it is the motivation, the background, and like what gave her the confidence that she was going to be able to pull this off.
Exactly. And it's actually similar when you're going through those competitive takes on a story. A really stark example is the Firefest documentaries, Netflix versus Hulu, was it?
Yeah.
And again, this was about, what was his name? Billy McFarland.
Yeah.
And again, a grand deception, a self-invention, someone who completely invented himself. And the common theme with Anna Delvey and Billy McFarland is a complete lack of grasp of the fact that there are consequences for actions.
Mm.
And that's always compelling in a character. And I think what we love about Anna Delvey is that she has managed to achieve on a huge scale what we try to achieve every day on Instagram. This is my best life. This is the American dream. People using filters, people making incremental edits to their lives in order to become what they want to be, in order to close the gap between who they are and who they want to be. And that's what Anna has done on a massive scale and managed to trick all these people. And as you say, it's sort of victimless because what it really blows the lid on is the fact that financial institutions do not comply with due diligence for the 1%.
No, absolutely not.
Or for who's perceived to be the 1%.
Yeah, it is positive discrimination against people who are perceived to already be very rich and successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Money begets money.
Yeah, and they bend the rules for the people at the top all the time. Yeah. And that is what is, that's why it feels like good on you, Anna.
Yeah.
Because she turned that system on its, not turned it on its head, but like.
She stuck it to the man.
Yeah.
In a way.
And it's kind of the same with Billy. These are people who have certain ideas about themselves or life, who I think convince themselves that they can achieve that if they can just get through the first steps of convincing other people to give them money. And like, to be honest with you, this is startup culture. This is someone who has a good idea. You go to rich investors, you say, give me your money and I'll turn your money into millions. You know, I'll turn your seed funding round into a couple of million in a few years' time. And we have seen this with the, you know, with WeWork, with Adam Newman, who managed to amass millions and millions and millions in investment, convincing people he was going to turn into something else. And it was just a totally fictitious, inflated situation bubble where it had no meaning. Mm. We've seen it with things like Bitcoin. When Elon Musk put 1.5 billion into Bitcoin there last week, it jacked the price up because of the perception of value. And like, these are things that nobody understands, but we're just creating this false economy that's based on lies and the value that money brings to it, if that makes sense. So, you know, WeWork's overall valuation skyrocketed when SoftBank invested in it, even though it was triple, quadruple the amount of money the SoftBank were investing in it. So it's like, it's not outside the realm of possibility that Anna could have actually opened that art space.
Well, she is doing what people do every day. She is trading with money that isn't there yet. People do it all the time. They take these risks because they're playing the long game, and this money doesn't exist, but they are trading off it and they are building empires and building careers. And she, the Anna Delvey Foundation is the project that she spoke about widely when she was socializing in all these circles. It was always the Anna Delvey Foundation. She was always going to be rich. And now it looks like, so there is a law that prevents criminals from profiting from their crime.
Yeah.
And this was, I think the law was first established in the 1970s and then scrapped. It was after a serial killer was seen to be profiting from his crimes. It was scrapped and brought in again in 2001. And stunningly, hasn't been triggered since 2001. This is the first time it's potentially going to be triggered. So if you are the likes of Netflix, and it becomes complicated when you approach someone before their trial, before they've been convicted. But Anna will have had to, no, Netflix will have had to declare this payment to the convicted criminal, and that payment is then frozen. So Anna doesn't actually have access to the 320 grand that she has been paid by Netflix until the cash is divvied out and then she gets the balance.
Remainder, yeah.
But that law has been triggered, and thankfully it has been triggered. But again, there isn't a huge appetite for punishment for Anna. As we're saying, it's more around, how did she ever get away with this? And there's only a certain type of person that would get away with this. And that's where it gets a little bit muddy, is that one of the people that she conned is a black woman called Nefertari, who was a hotel concierge. Would Nefertari have ever gotten away with the same stunt? Probably not.
Absolutely not.
And that really throws the lid open on what we reward. And it is perception versus reality. Actually, the Trumps are a huge, they really epitomize this perception versus reality idea that has become so prevalent and endemic today. And Ivanka Trump, who you know is one of my obsessions, capital letters. not because I love her or because I...
Because we... you.
I study
really,
her.
Yeah. And you really expect her to be very smart.
I did believe in her. I do think she's smart. And I can't believe that someone that is so smart can be so... have such a weak moral compass. So I study Ivanka Trump. Mm-hmm. But a quote that she was widely reviled for was, "Perception means more than reality." This is something that she wrote in the Trump card, which was her guide to work and life. She mm-hmm. wrote when she was 27 as an heiress. She was quite self-aware in it. She was like, yeah. "I've obviously been given X, Y, Z. But I often find when I go into a negotiation room that perception is far more important than reality." Donald Trump is a huge fan of Norman Peale, who was the original positive thinker, the original The Secret.
Yeah.
Used to say, if you think a certain thing, then it's going to happen. And in a way, we all are fans or advocates of this manifestation.
Totally.
But craze.
But what this is privilege.
It's total privilege.
It's privilege. Like Ivanka Trump going into a room and saying, you know, and it's like the thing that Alexander Nix said when he was working, he was the CEO of Cambridge Analytica. And when he was talking to advisors for the Brexit campaign, he famously said that line, "It doesn't have to be true, it just has to be believed."
Yeah.
And that's the problem. But the reason that things can be believed and the reason the perception matters when Ivanka Trump walks into a room is privilege.
Yeah.
Is because historically, rich white people have performed well. So I, as a cis white woman, should be able to walk into a room and replicate that. Whereas a black woman is not going to be able to walk into a room and convince what is going to be a board of probably male white investors to give her the same opportunities.
Yeah. And the reason we've such an appetite for these stories is because it does resemble what we try and do every day, which is we hope we can transcend our limitations based on positive thinking or faking it until we make it. And the fact is, we do for a period of time, but that disconnect only gets wider and wider and wider between who we are and who we want to be. And the whole manifestation movement very much resembles now get.
Yes.
If you look at
With ease.
Like, you don't have to work for this. Just be more positive. All of the headlines, if you Google manifestation, it's going to be how to manifest a Tesla, how to manifest more money.
I do want
a
Tesla.
Yeah, I know you do. I knew you would. But it's very much get. It's a completely superficial, it's spiritual materialism, nearly.
I know. And it's bizarre because, spirituality, generally, you weren't allowed to wish for love or money.
Yeah.
It was about kindness and peace and all that kind of stuff.
Gratitude.
Yeah, and gratitude. So the idea, like my nanny used to say to me as well, when she was Catholic and praying, she's like, "You can't pray for love or money, like you just won't get it.
That's not
allowed. And if you say it out loud, then you'll be seen as a selfish little mortal and you'll be in trouble."
Yeah.
But this idea, like when you go on, and it's everywhere, like you go on TikTok, YouTube, whatever, there's this money manifestation thing that's really eking through. And I think the process of manifestation, I think the really what keeps The Secret alive and working, is that when you say something out loud, when you admit that you want it or need it in that like manifestation chant or whatever it is, then you start working towards it. And then when you've achieved it, you'll often look back and say, "Well, I manifested that." But in actual fact, when you admit something out loud to yourself, you find yourself working towards it a little bit better. And when you're manifesting money, especially based on this TikTok manifestation chant that I have heard, you have to say a specific amount.
Yeah.
So like I really got into this a while ago when we were fundraising at the moment in the business to develop a piece of tech. And I had accessed finance and I was like, "Well, I manifest that. I said it out loud." But no, I didn't. I just wrote that amount of money down when I was going through the proper processes of accessing finance.
Mm.
So it wasn't a manifestation. It was following everything that's been set out to be followed and to work.
And that's it. It's proven that optimists do have more success, but not because they've positive thoughts. It's because their positive thoughts result in behaviors that are conducive to success.
Of course, because your thinking is, "Well, I need that. I can achieve that. Let me go through the steps to do it."
And on the converse, and this might sound like a dramatic comparison, but there's a lot of people battling with this. when you suffer from something like OCD or negative automatic thoughts, you are taught again and again in therapy, your thoughts do not equal reality. And that the idea can become very dangerous. But in this scenario, we have a woman who not only is, I'm back to Anna, who is not only manifesting or dreaming big or convincing herself, but there's a thought action fusion whereby she's acting out, she's forging documents, she is living this life.
Yeah.
And it's what we've told people to do. So it's almost, there's something very compelling about it, where there's something in me, I'm admitting, that admires her absolute brassiness.
Yeah, because I do believe that she believes that she would have gotten to a point where the foundation was up and running, where the art show was in place, and it probably would have been successful.
Yeah.
Based on the connections that she managed to make to, you know, to defraud people out of the money, she probably would have had a very successful little business, enough to pay people back anyway. And it's the kind of thing, I think Billy McFarland would have been the same. Had he pulled off Fyre Festival, he would have made back the money that he got in the investment. So their original ideas, their business plans or whatever, are kind of like, they probably would work.
Yeah.
It's interesting that with Anna, I think there's a really clear path here, and she was trying to achieve something, and she, you know, she was motivated by financial gain. It's an interesting one as well, because we have a few female con artists in the last kind of 5 years who've gained notoriety through podcasts and through Netflix specials and that kind of stuff. Mm. Like Elizabeth Holmes being another one.
Yes. There's a fight over the rights for that, I think.
Yeah. But that's another one. There was a great documentary. There was a great documentary about Liz, or podcast about Elizabeth Holmes. Mm. There was the Missing Crypto Queen, another one. And then we've got Samantha Azzopardi as well, who are all these like women who've gained international attention based on their perceived cons or frauds. Mm. Elizabeth Holmes, I think, is another one who did believe that her business was going to work out. I mean, she covered up a lot of the data that was discouraging, and she, you know, she created a narrative that was much more successful than where the business actually was. But I think she was just trying to buy herself time and did believe that they would eventually get to a stage where the technology worked.
The Elizabeth Holmes one is another rabbit hole that is so fascinating to watch, because she's a completely original person.
Yeah.
And Anna Delvey is a totally original person. We just don't see people like this. And even the speculation that Elizabeth Holmes has changed her voice, she's distorted her voice in order to portray this persona that she has created. And, she, you know, it's a fictitious persona that she has now made reality. And she actually has a high pitched voice, but she uses a low pitched voice.
Mm.
And the thing that for me is so disappointing about Anna Delvey is I did think she was a truly original person. But even Anna Delvey has succumbed to the Instagram trap of, she put up a post during the week with fabulously filtered skin, and it was captioned "no makeup selfie." She has clearly used Facetune in it, right? This is just so disappointing to me, because that is unoriginal. And there's this phenomenon where we think that we are master manipulators, and that we're the only people, and everyone thinks that they're the only person who can get away with a lie, but that they can always detect someone else's lie. When everyone thinks that, it obviously falls apart. So Anna Delvey believes that she can get away with using a filter on Instagram. It's just so disappointing to me.
There is something about Anna Delvey that she doesn't operate within the same, obviously doesn't operate within the same confines the rest of us do. And I wonder, is that, but I mean, this, they would have gone through this all with her trial. Is that a kind of mental illness thing? But I don't think so. I think she is just a kind of con artist.
The beauty of it is she has no fear. That's just something that's missing. And is she actually, her story is similar to the Killing Eve character, Villanelle, in a lot of ways. She was even Russian born and has created these characters and seems to be a sociopath. But it's not that they have something extra. There's a scene in Killing Eve where he says, Villanelle doesn't have something that we don't have. She lacks something that we have. And that thing is the ability to feel fear, which can be very limiting
or
in daily
empathy.
Life. Well, she doesn't have empathy either. It was really chilling when her statement when she was convicted was, you know, I understand that I've hurt a lot of people, but I didn't think that anything I did was wrong. She doesn't get it. Like, she doesn't have that moral compass where she feels if she tricks you out of it, then, you know, fair is fair. She won.
Yeah.
But what was I saying?
Villanelle lacks something.
Oh, yeah. So it's the lack of fear that we're all trying to, any self-development manual or article you read is stop being controlled by your fear. So there's something about watching a woman who has no limitation around fear that's really interesting, or that you feel like, I want to embody a little bit of that in my daily life.
Yes, but she's done a disservice to all of us, because the thing is, you look at her now and you think that I could step out of line and be perceived as a total con, or like, I don't know what I'm doing, and therefore I'll walk myself into a situation that's quite dangerous and disingenuous. I think that it's interesting because I do love that we have these female con artists, because, you know, the idea of the confidence gap, that women generally will apply for a job where they feel like they meet 70-80%, or sorry, where they meet 100% of their criteria, will only apply for a job when they meet 100% of their criteria, whereas men will apply for a job when they meet anything above 70%.
Yeah.
And it's that idea that, like, you know, men generally feel more self-aware and more confident, just to be completely general, based on the study of the confidence gap. So to have women who are like, fuck it, I'm just going to run head first into this fire and fake it till I make it, and like try and make my way through, I think is inspirational somewhat.
There is something there. Men always think that they are enough.
Yeah.
They don't need to look outside themselves for skills or experience on a CV, to use your example, to feel like they're enough to apply for a job. They feel like they're enough. Women often do have to look outside of themselves. And we have the inverse problem that Anna Delvey had. Even when we are uniquely qualified, we can sometimes feel, why am I here? Why do these people like me? Whereas Anna traded on her charisma. She's apparently a very rude person, which probably gives the illusion of wealth, because she just doesn't need to impress anyone. She doesn't care what anyone thinks. And therefore, she managed to infiltrate these social circles in New York that are notoriously difficult to infiltrate. If you or I found ourselves in a situation where we were socializing with these people, even if we were uniquely qualified to be there, we would question whether we were. Or, you know, beyond having that gap of I'm not enough, she's gone the other end of the...
Yeah, because the reports about her and anyone who commented on her said that she wasn't out, like, her comments and her discourse with people was often very classist, which was put on. So, like, if we were even, you know, the fact that we've such empathy or, like, are considerate of other people means that you just wouldn't go there. Whereas, like, that's just a clear indicator that that's, again, something that she lacks, is any sort of connection or empathy or kindness for people.
So she's now friends again with Nefertari, the girl that she originally conned as the hotel concierge.
What?
They are palling around in New York. Nefertari, you know the way sometimes I DM people on Instagram?
You do. I do too.
Oh, you do. I DM'd Nefertari and she responded to me.
Did she? This is an exclusive now.
This is a sclusy. I asked when the Netflix documentary will be out, and I asked why she's still friends with Anna.
And what did she say?
She got back and she said, soon.
This isn't one of those times you're like, tell me what's on your shopping list.
Shut up.
But that is a nice segue into an upcoming topic, because my DM person all the time is Demi Lovato. I just think...
See, I'm more realistic. I shoot a little bit lower. Like, Demi is never going to reply to you.
No, she's not. But she might read the message and I just want her to know.
Okay,
that she's, you know, that there's people out there who are concerned for her.
Yeah.
Like, all I say is, you know, I hope you're okay.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I just think she needs a good friend, especially after this week at YouTube, who's another just like originals giant coming into the streaming wars, you know?
Yeah.
YouTube are doing a YouTube original documentary on Demi and her drug abuse. And even in the trailer, it revealed that she had a heart attack and 3 strokes after one of her overdoses, and doesn't seem to be, if we're led to believe the kind of the teasing in the trailer, doesn't seem to be sober now.
Okay. Oh, God.
Yeah. So I love Demi Lovato. I think she's incredibly talented. And I hope she's okay. And I hope she listens to the episode where we talk about her documentary. I don't know if we'll talk about it next whenever it's out. We'll have to give it a good watch.
Whenever it's out. But the homework that we can assign is Promising Young Thing. Or is it Promising Young Woman? I keep calling it Promising Young Thing. We are going to watch that this week and chat about that next week. Are we able to legally watch it?
I think it's available in certain places. I've heard of people being able to rent it on Apple.
Okay. I haven't watched anything on Apple since the morning show, which is
good. Yeah, neither have I. I don't think Apple is a player in the original.
Did you do the homework that I assigned for you and watch WandaVision on Disney?
I didn't.
I really can't recommend it enough.
I will get on that now.
And it's Elizabeth Olsen. It's the Olsen twins' sister.
I've heard she's great.
She is incredible as the Scarlet Witch. And it's a great entry point for anyone who kind of is curious about the Marvel Universe but hasn't got stuck in. It's a great entry point.
Fantastic. Yeah. I will give that a go. Thank you. You can contact us. You can DM us on Instagram and see if we're okay.
I'll share my shopping list with you.
I'm at Cassie Lorraine.
Oh, are we plugging our Instagrams?
We can.
Oh, okay, I'm at...
We can't tell them to contact Megan you and not Marie give Cass. You your handle.
Yeah, I think it's Megan Marie Cass or Meg Marie Cass. Megan.
Yeah, that's where you'll get pictures of Megan and I and pictures of my dog.
Pictures from 2017 that we have shamelessly rolled out again.
They're absolutely
and again.
Appalling. Like, they're great photos is why we rolled them out so much, but like unrecognizable.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, no, I am. Yeah, you'd spot you. You'd be like, there's Megan when she was younger.
So hurtful. Okay.
Thank you.